This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
This is about something that lights your fire when nothing else will.
This is the Mark Divine Show. This show, we're going to discover and dive in and discuss what makes the world's most inspirational, compassionate, and resilient leaders so courageous.
Transform the nature and functioning of our own brain for the better.
Go put your virtues in action. Be the best version of yourself.
Life is a practice. Day by day, get wiser and stronger and grow.
How do you understand enough about your own mind and psychology and emotions, and how you develop a reflective awareness practice to actually get in the driver's seat of your own mind?
We go in-depth with people from all walks of life. Martial arts grandmasters, meditative monks, CEOs, military leaders, stoic philosophers, proud survivors, and more. Every episode turns our guests' experience into actionable insights that you can learn from to lead a life filled with compassion and courage.
I started putting all these little tools in my pocket, started to reflect a lot and meditate.
There has to be a balance between movement and rest.
It all starts with us. We cultivate these qualities in ourselves to become a beacon of light for others in the world. Please join us on the journey. The Mark Divine Show, hoo-yah.
Today's episode brought to you by J.B. Weld. Available, by the way, at jbweld.com, Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, AutoZone, Advance Auto Parts, O'Reilly, Amazon, Michaels, and more, and proudly made in the USA.
Hey, guys. Welcome to CarCast. This week, we're going to invite my good friend Aaron Hagar onto the show. We're going to get all into what motivates him and his car collection and more. Before we get started, here's Geico. Would you love to save money on insurance? Well, of course. Who doesn't love a good deal? Well, when it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, GEICO can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even homeowners, condo, and renters coverage. Save even more with a special discount when you bundle coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use GEICO mobile app and 24-hour roadside assistance, and the switch to GEICO becomes a no-brainer. Switch today and see how you can save. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent. Hello, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea. So we're going to change things up a little bit this week. Adam's actually out this week, so we're going to hold down the fort. I thought about inviting, I thought it'd be fun to invite Aaron Hagar onto the show, one of my favorite people in the world. Love Aaron. He is so fantastic. And I know for those of you that listen to Shift and Steer with myself and Brad, Aaron as well, we've been doing that show for a number of years. We enjoy doing it because it was a podcast we started with Pete Shaporis as well. And he's just such a great storyteller, and he's been around forever. And we kind of love being able to do that show with him. And then after he passed, we decided to continue to do it because we always just had fun doing it. So when we get together on Fridays to record our show, it's really it's not about business. It's more about fun. There's some podcasts that you do for business, and all of these are just fun. But Aaron, thank you so much for joining us. And
Well, thank you, buddy. What a beautiful introduction. And if you look at the Shift and Steer business card under my name, it says The Giggler.
The Giggler. There's going to be a lot of giggling.
So that's my only task. Yeah, that's my only task on the show is giggle relief.
So I wanted to maybe we'll get into some car news stuff, but I was really thinking more about you and all of the conversations we've had over the years. And, you know, no secret, you come from this rock star family. You yourself are quite talented, I might say. Your brother, I know his career is starting to really go. Your dad's done a few things over the years. Sammy Hagar, he's been in a few bands. He's been in the van, what's it again? Halen? Van Halen, yes. And I don't know. And he seems like he's got 19 other bands, just depending on like who's in the room or what he feels on like singing that day. I'm not quite sure how it all works, but I know he's got certain bands depending on who is with him. You know, it's like, hey, if this guitarist is here, we're called this. If it's this guy, we're called this. And I started to figure out like that's kind of how it works with him. And by the way, he's got a big birthday bash coming up, right? 75-year-old.
Yeah. October 13th down in Cabo. The annual. Well, first of all, thank you so much for the very, very kind introduction and having me on the show. Of course, it's absolutely mutual, Matt. Absolutely mutual. You are my friend and go to on so many levels. I love the whole crew, and I have to say, my life really, really just blossomed when you and Brad and Pete took me on and took me under your wings and introduced me to the world, because I was harbored up in the basement of Harvey's casino up in Tahoe, running that restaurant, and life was hell.
So you decided to do something different. All right. Actually, so
thank you for the exit.
I want to get into that a little bit as well. You've done a number of things, some pretty incredible things over your career, over your life, and although it kind of makes sense to kind of start from the beginning, but let's not. Let's kind of maybe start from the middle-ish. So, of course, a car guy. You're a fantastic artist, a car guy, but have jumped around to a couple of different opportunities. You had mentioned running the restaurant, right? Running the restaurant at the casino in Lake Tahoe, right? Running the
yep.
You're running the Cabo Wabo up there, right?
Yep, the Cabo Wabo Lake Tahoe opened in 2005. Yeah.
And how long were you?
I've forgotten already.
How long were you there? How long were you doing that?
I did about a 10-year stint. So it was owned and operated by Harrah's. So I was a Harrah's employee, which was a really difficult part of the task. We had just opened it outside of the Mexico property, and it was the first of its kind outside that property. So it was important to the family to have someone there to kind of validate and make it legit. So I was going through a divorce, and I volunteered to go up there and kind of start over. I'm in Tahoe currently, up here and start over. And, you know, it was necessary. It was important. It was a great learning experience. Like I said, life really kind of blossomed in many ways. I got to regroup and get organized again and start over. But working corporate, I'm an artist and a creative by nature. So working corporate was really, really hard, but it was really necessary. And I learned a great deal from it and got to know all the fans one-on-one and rehearsed life skills every single day.
Yeah. So this is kind of we're kind of starting in the middle, but this is sort of a reboot in your life. Like
reboot
you said,
number four.
Yeah, after a divorce and kind of a reboot. And 10 years is a good run. That's a long run. It's probably longer than you probably thought you were going to be up there. Well, you're still in that job.
Yeah, I'm still up here. I planted some roots. But the business was there for 15 years. So having participated in 10 of those 15 years, I'm pretty proud of it. Nothing really happened to the business. We didn't renew our licensing agreement with Harrah's just because they went through a lot of changes. The town went through a lot of changes, and we just didn't feel that it, well, I don't want to say it wasn't relevant. It was definitely relevant, but I think I can speak for Dad as well in saying that they just didn't seem to have the interest in the business and weren't fostering the business the way we wanted them to. They were really trying to cut labor and food costs and insurance and all the other things that corporate does. And it just didn't meet our interests or agendas anymore. So we didn't renew. And it's really as simple as that. 15 really successful years and some great, great people working under the brands. So.
And explain how this is all kind of set up. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of lack of clarification on oftentimes on how things work, like behind the scenes on businesses. You read about, you know, so-and-so owns this or somebody cashed out on that. And oftentimes it's not true and oftentimes it is true. But the family has the Cabo Wabo. Well, I would imagine some people think the family owns all the Cabo Wabo restaurants, the Cabo Wabo liquor brand, and everything associated with Cabo Wabo. But that's not necessarily how it is, and it can't legally be that way, right? So maybe just explain a little bit of the structure so we know what's going on.
Right. So I'm not an expert, but in my understanding, there's really, really strict liquor laws. And in those laws, you cannot manufacture an alcoholic beverage and own the business of the same name. So being it, even though Dad sold Cabo Wabo Tequila, he still can't be in operations of the Cabo Wabo. I'll call it franchise, but I say that very loosely. Dad really does individual marketing, individual licensing, based on relations and groups and pitches. He wants them to be successful. We've only let a few go because of some really, really heavy stuff that was just out of our control. But it's a complicated thing in the U.S. But Dad was really smart in business as well, because, you know, obviously he couldn't be in operations. Mm-hmm. He's a musician and a businessman, an entrepreneur. So, you know, he can't be in operations of these restaurants. And I was kind of being groomed to kind of be in operations, or at least understand them to kind of keep things moving in that direction in food and beverage, of which I'm consulting a bit with the family businesses. But yeah, Dad's licensed Sammy's Beach Bar Room, Cabo Wabo, and probably soon Santo, and Red Rocker, and some of his other entities. So we've had restaurants pop up, which have been kind of a lifestyle themed destination type model. And the Sam Eats beach bars are in many airports around the country, yeah, if not the world. And those all go to charity. All of those go to local and regional children's charities, mostly individual cases, the Hagar Foundation, which is run by the family. And every case is looked over by us individually. It's pretty awesome. So Dad's really set it up not only to protect the interest of the estate, but also to be as generous as he can in his philanthropy and not get wrapped up and tied up in corporate stuff or you know, you hear about charities.
Yeah.
We're not one of those.
I didn't even know that you had the charity aspect, yeah, of it. That's fantastic.
Yeah, there's operational costs in charities, which there's only sometimes a small percentage that actually goes to the charity,
yes,
itself.
Do you
and
hear
it's,
that
it's really it, yeah, and it's really difficult. And some people run them as a business, and we don't do that. So all of the proceeds from these restaurants, the profits all go to charity. It's pretty awesome. So all of Dad's cut from these things is all part of the philanthropy, which is pretty, pretty cool. And then Dad does that with his shows too, food banks and that sort of thing. He's mm-hmm. The older he's gotten, the more he's given back on a regular basis. And it's pretty awesome. And we're all kind of involved in that. And that's a really cool thing we get to do, is perform together at these events and charities. Dad brings family members up, but it's mostly me. Although Andrew opened for Dad, I think he's going to open a couple shows on this tour as well. His whole vibe is a bit different from Dad's. He doesn't appeal directly to the audience because he's a lot younger. You know, he's in his 30s. I'm in my 50s, so I share the same audience. I'm the same age as the audience. So when I go up there, we celebrate Dad's career. When Andrew goes up there, he's trying to kind of land his own thing. So it's
right.
It's a little bit different, but it's awesome. The fans love it, and that keeps it a family event. So Dad is really generous with the fans and the family. It's pretty awesome. It's a good life.
So on the creative side, for yourself, as a musician, I've heard you sing. I think you're fantastic. And this isn't going to be the first time you've heard this. You do sound quite a bit like your dad.
With intention. Yeah. Speaking of which, dad just texts me. He texts me a meme and it says, gas prices are so high, I just passed Sammy Hagar driving 55. Dad literally texts me.
That's funny.
As we were talking. A little serendipity there.
Yeah, that's good. That's funny. So, yeah. So let's talk about – so you do sound like your dad, but it's intentional. And it's intentional because you were doing some shows or you're doing some stuff for your dad for singing, and it made sense to – emulate, as you will, right?
Yeah, I mean, great word. Yeah, so basically, when I came up to look after the restaurant, I started in the kitchen and kind of worked through available jobs as they were as they came up. I mean, I was a Harrah's employee, so I had to do it by the book, and so I kind of entertained every single duty in there except for cocktail, which was reserved strictly for women. And then I ended up in middle management, which was terrible, but necessary. But one of my duties was to go up almost nightly and sing with the band. So we would have live entertainment 5 days a week and a DJ 2 nights a week, because we had a lot of employees from all over the world, and we'd give them a night, you know, like a Brazilian night and Eastern European night, and they would come in and dance, and it was awesome. So it was kind of an industry night. So we did 2 nights of DJ, but 5 nights a week we did live shows, and I worked quite often 7 days a week. So I would participate and all that stuff. And I would go up with the band, and one of the criteria was that the band knew, some of the Hagar tunes, and I would learn some of the cover tunes, and we'd often do an hour set or more. And then dad had me open for him. I think he went out with Chickenfoot during the summer series and played for about 10,000 people. And they don't do any of the Hagar stuff because they had their own catalog. So in a day's notice, he had me front his band, the Wabos, and kind of cover the catalog. So, yeah, as you said.
Good thing you knew the songs. It was,
yeah, well, I told him. I said, he goes, you know this stuff. He goes, you hear it every day of your life, all day and all night long.
Yeah.
You know, growing up or when it was written or on the radio or in the cantina. So, it's there. I just have to draw it out. And it's really true. So when you hear people do covers, whether it's Pat Monahan doing, Zeppelin or whoever it is, getting the vocals right and getting the phrasing and the breath and all the little details can be really, really hard. And there are professionals out there that really do an amazing job. You have that gentleman out with Journey, and Jason Bonham has an amazing vocalist right now out on tour. And, there's plenty of them out there. I've never heard that. And everybody out there that attempts it, they may have a great range, they do a great job, but they tend to sing a little more standard to all the hair bands back in the day. You know, their vibrato is different and their phrasing is different. The way they mouth the words and pronounce the words is different. And it makes me nuts. So I took it upon myself to really be an expert. And I have to modify it a little bit because I think if you close your eyes, I can nail it and you can't tell the difference. So we've never explored that. But when I did a little musical project, it kind of became a problem because it sounded too much like it. So we picked an era, which ended up being kind of the Montrose era, and we were just all writing together, and that's just what came out. And I really had to kind of find myself and find my own voice and all that, because I'm such a mimic, can mimic anything. I grew up in the film industry and played with monsters and played with voiceover stuff. We're always, in the workshops and in the studios articulating the puppets and characters and coming up with voices. So I became this mimic, this human parrot. And that's kind of how I treated dad stuff. And in all of that, it was really hard to find my own voice. I still, to this day, don't know what my real voice is, but yeah, I can sound just like dad. It's fun. And sometimes I do it just to get a smile out of him when he has me participate. But I would never out sing him. That was one of the things I always held back. I always stood behind his front line, you know, when he was on stage. I always paid him that respect because, you know, I am not my father, and I haven't earned those stripes, and I'm not going to go up there and outshine, you know.
Do you recall your dad, maybe his reaction or the first time he actually really heard you emulate him, like really heard it?
Yeah. So there was a couple times. I think the first time I explored music, which was later in life, I had left the film industry. I was almost 20. I think I was about 18 or 19. And I was working for Hans Zimmer. I was his night assistant. So it was just Hans and I. I'd pick him up because he lived near Malibu. So I'd pick him up my way in, and because he didn't drive. And I'd drive him to work. And then I'd sit there all night and make sure he had coffee, cigarettes, and food. and then I'd just play in the studio. So my friend Mike Stevens and I, at the time, Jay Rifkin was his partner. And we would just pick up tracks and just, we would just track and track and track. And so we had Rylan Allison on drums. And I think his dad was in Herman and the Hermits. And then Kyle Eastwood on bass, because we both went to school with Kyle and Allison Eastwood. Mike and I were friends with them. And we had this little band we called Big Chief. And we produced some music, got a record, a budget, and through Geffen and then later with Warner, and just had a lot of fun. But I developed my voice then, and it was very, Mike was really soft, and we would write a lot of soft ballady boy band kind of music. And so the first time I remember I played something to my parents, they were in bed, and I said, okay, I've been doing something. I want to play it for you. And it was horrible. And I think there was mixed opinions. They were very kind and polite, but you know, Dad was kind of like, okay, this is not the Hagar sound. You've got your own thing. And I quickly found out that that's not what I wanted to be. And I got hired with Bloodline, Joe Bonamassa's early project. I was the original singer for Bloodline. And they wanted the Hagar sound. And I think that's when I really kind of pushed and realized that I had those tones. I had that range. And as I developed it, I started to sound a lot like Dad. And Bloodline really pushed for me to sound like Dad, because they were all sons of. So it was Waylon Krieger and Barry Oakley Jr., Aaron Davis, Lou Secretti, and Joe Bonamassa, and myself. So other than Lou, we were all second gen sons of. And the whole thing was to kind of emulate our parents. And it was a marketing, you know, it was a marketing vehicle for Joe to launch his career, which of course was successful because Joe Bonamassa is amazing. And yeah, he owns it now. So yeah, it was really interesting. And that was kind of my first time exploring Dad's sound. And then when I came up here, I really kind of rehearsed it nightly. And yeah. It just became the Hagar parrot.
Yeah. At some point, you must have been opening for your dad. And listen, I get how a lot of this works. He may not even be there for the opening act, right? You got stuff going on. He's going to go back. He's going to warm up with the band. He might
he
not even
there.
And then he must have heard you out there at one point singing his tune, sounding a lot like him, and probably got his attention.
Yeah. We never discussed it, and I don't really know how he felt about it. You know, Dad definitely has that rock star thing about him. We'll just leave it at that. He's definitely calmed down in his older age, and we're very close. So I say this all in love. But imagine if one of you, I mean, most of us look for our kids to be better than us, right? So we raise our kids in the environment. We teach them everything we can. And okay, kid, you're going to take over the business, and you're going to take everything that I've built up to this point, and you're going to do better with it, right? You're going to grow the business. You're going to grow the family brand. I don't know that we can with Dad, because, you know, he's one of those uber rare, you know, people that have just launched into superstardom, and he's part of history. He's part of the history books. I mean, he's got to be in a very small handful of legends through musical, you know, a history forever. I mean, it's you know, he made his mark. So I can't top that. I can't expand on that, at least not musically. But I would think for him, hearing something that's probably very, very close might bother him a little bit, you know? Hey, look, I don't know. It was.
You could be the world's greatest, a baseball pitcher, and then, and you're like, I'm going to teach my kid how to throw the ball around. And you walk outside and you realize that your 16-year-old's got a fastball faster than you. And, you're like a little proud, but a little like butt hurt because you're like, I worked my ass off to be able to throw that way, right? So, you walk over to your son and go, listen, maybe you should play soccer.
And now I think about it, Dad did say something that was really profound at the time. And when he was prepping me for that show, he said, hey, you can do this. He goes, just, when I go out there, I'm looking for the guy in the audience that's not paying attention. And I vocally, reach around and grab him by the neck and scream in his face, are you listening? Check this out. He goes, it's such a trip because you go up there and you dilly-dally around and you do your thing and like you're playing with the band and the audience is watching and the audience is participating with you having a good time. He goes, it's really different. He goes, you don't have anything to prove. He goes, it comes really easy to you. And that was a really nice compliment, and also he was saying, you don't take shit seriously. you're just out there goofing around but I think that, for someone that's worked so hard his entire life to be the best he can be. And when he was in Van Halen, I've said this before, but he trained like an athlete. He took it like an Olympian, really. He took it so, so seriously. Like this was just the best job in the world. And he worked so hard. And I've never had that kind of conditioning and been in that kind of shape, not physically or vocally. So, I don't have that endurance. I'm good for about an hour and then I can't talk for a week. But Dad does it night after night after night, 2 to 3 hours, at peak range while running around the stage, And so I was always a hobbyist. And I think that's got to bug him a little bit because, I didn't work for it. It was part of my genetics, and mm-hmm. It was just part of being creative, and paying attention and being a little rehearsed. And that's kind of how everything's been in life, and we do that with our kids. Our kids, like you said, they jump in the driver's seat and they can drive from playing a damn video game.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? Like, how did you just appear and make it work? I think that's just part of human evolution too,
No, listen, I mean, the first time maybe you and I have ever hit a track, even like a Willow Springs or something, you're like, I was nervous doing it my first time. And, I'm trying to get my lap times better. And then a youngster, even your boy Finn, could probably hop into a car and be like, the first lap or two breaks the ice. And then three laps in, he's like, wait a minute, you already got your lap time down to what I've been doing for years. I'm like, what's going on?
It's like, what, you're a damn savant?
Yeah.
Spectrum kid? What's going on? I think it's human evolution, man. I think especially when you're just immersed in the environment growing up, it just becomes part of you. It's part of your clothing. It's part of your gear. It's part of your mentality. And maybe you don't have to overcome a lot of the things that your parents did or your siblings did while on the journey. It's mm-hmm. It's awesome. It's very cool. It's very interesting to look at. And I've always been fascinated by the next generation of kids out there because I consider us experts, at the family, in the family school. And so many of them have blown it. Just excess recklessness and just not being great human beings. I think and hope that that's changing, but it's been a cliche and I've never wanted to be that person. So, we get wonderful opportunities. We get wonderful doors to open for us. And I just wanted to make sure that I had a skill set behind it to manage it, to impress and to push forward. Because the expectation is high. And when you walk into the office at Geffen Records on invitation, because they're curious, you better be good and you better be well behaved and you better be articulate and, you better live up to the name and then some.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people work very hard and never get that opportunity and they're 10 times better than you. It's a tough game. My brother's dealing with it right now. He is damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. He's working so hard to make his own way out there. And man, he just keeps getting socked in the nose. It's like, well, if Dad helps him, then, oh, of course, yeah, fucking Sammy helps him, you know. And if dad doesn't, you know, it's like, well, what's wrong with him that his dad's not helping him, you know? So you're kind of in that situation. It can be quite damaging.
It is. Oftentimes you think it's a layup, but other times it can be more difficult. So I don't know if that kind of balances out, but you're right. Like, maybe your dad just has to kind of very carefully figure out how or when to help, you know? And it's a lot of doing it on your own. And then when things are really happening, if you can make things happen on your own, then maybe ask for that little push, you know, now I need the push,
that little key. Yeah, a little introduction. Well, look at like the car people. Look at in the drag world and the Pritchetts and all the people out there who are second.
The Force family.
and look at Schumacher. So I just wrapped up the new season of the F1, which is fantastic. Oh my God, that show! I'm not even a race fan, and that show just is captivating. Mm-hmm. I was waiting for tires just burning through episodes, you know. You know, and Schumacher's boy is out there. And I mean, wow. I think it's a similar situation where, you know, his dad is legendary. He is forever in the history books. And he's out there trying to prove it on his own with a little privilege on a talented team of youth. He's got some challenges. And I don't know. It's like, do you expect more? Or do you just expect him to go through it and drive hard? And just grow little by little, you know, and not get out there and be over talented and then blow it. You know, he's evolving kind of slow.
Well, I hate to say this because for Schumacher's situation, the only help he can get from his dad is the name.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's in an awkward situation as well. So
definitely. Well, you look at the era too. Like for my brother, getting dad's help or advice is really challenging because dad's advice is dated in that the business has changed, the audience has changed, the music has changed, the industry's changed. Everything's changed about music now. You know, mediocre is king. And it's really a shame because when you're trying to make great music and it doesn't always gel because some people just want the next thing. And then 5 minutes later, they want the next thing and the next thing. And so I think the way music is written and marketed now is very different than what dad went through. So when he's trying to advise Andrew, it doesn't always apply. And I think that creates, you know, a lot of difficult working space between him and Andrew and it's hard to communicate. And it's hard to share opinions and it's hard to get good guidance or feedback. Oh, you know what you should do, you know, go back to this or go back to that. And Andrew's like, Dad, you know, that doesn't work anymore. That's like, it always works. It's like, it kind of doesn't.
Yeah. I understand that. I understand.
Go to bias by tires and you'll win the championship.
Yeah. Right. I know this is a little bit different kind of car cast episode, but there is some car talk here. There's going to be some car talk before we.
Well, I'm trying to weave it in.
Yeah. Well, sorry. This is what we're getting to. So, your dad is a car guy. You're definitely a car guy. You know, anybody that listens to Shift and Steer knows some of the cars you're into and what you have in your collection and the projects and constantly very, very artistic stuff for sure. I mean, just looking around in your, you know, in your studio and at your shop, art is the career that you have now. We'll get into that for a second. But you mentioned your brother, Andrew. You got brothers and sisters, but they are quite a bit younger than you are. So you essentially grew up as an only child. You know, your brother wasn't born until you were, I don't know, 16 years old or something, 15, 16 years old, and he was a baby. So it wasn't like you were hanging out with him for quite some time. So, you know, the first 20 years of your life, you are the only son, right? You know, like, mm-hmm, you know, pretty much, that could talk and do shit, right? Because you're not a baby. And And also in an era where your dad's making interesting moves, you know, from Montrose and Van Halen and all these various bands and, you know, ups and downs of life and family and all of this stuff. So the first question is, how are you not a screw up? Right? The sons of athletes and musicians often take a let's say an enthusiastic turn in life. And I don't know. I guess touch on that a little bit. Was your relationship with your dad, your outlook of that, I guess, was always kind of a little different. Like, I think a lot of kids immediately feel in the shadow. Like, they start to realize maybe who their celebrity parents are, and they kind of feel in the shadow, and it maybe, I don't know, maybe it puts a hamper on their development or their creativity. But it was interesting because I think you as a kid still always wanted to get your dad's approval, impress your dad.
Sure.
You certainly looked at what he was doing and saw the hard work, saw the success. Mm-hmm. Probably saw some bad things in the process as well. And
always do. It's a balanced program. So I mean, there's a lot of factors in this, but I'd say the main ones are, one, good parenting. Mm-hmm. You know, I think my parents made good choices. I was a little free range kid. I was a bit of a free range kid and went through the Waldorf school and grew up in a small town. Didn't grow up with anything. We were very, you know, we were very poor, and dad was very driven. And as his career evolved, so did our lifestyle. Obviously, Van Halen being, you know, the golden era that mm-hmm. we call it. But, you know, I never got wrapped up in all the stuff, you know.
No drugs, no alcohol. Like, it was never really on the menu for you.
Yeah, I've never smoked, never drank, never did drugs. I've never had any habits or addictions or trials. Literally never done anything.
Your dad literally owns like 5 alcohol companies, right?
I know. I'm the weirdest ambassador ever. I think growing up observing and being creative and watching things grow and evolve and being you know, fostered in education and art, I found interest in things and I found purpose in things very young, and that's definitely a driving force in keeping someone occupied. And I think, you know, the whole saying with idle hands, I think by the time I left the film industry and joined Hans's team, I had worked on 30 plus films. Mm-hmm. I started working in the film industry in my early mid teens. And, you know, whether it was, you know, sweeping a floor in the beginning with Kenny Myers at his studio and eventually, you know, working on stuff that we've all seen and explored. I always had some purpose and I drove a classic car, which made me a mechanic as a teenager as well. I drive that car across California to work and to work on films. And, you know, I had to drive long distance at night one time without any lights working and shown a little mag light out the window, at the reflective stripe so that I could see the road. I mean,
yeah, I've done that. I've been down that road.
Right?
Yeah. I don't advise it. Oh, yeah. maybe we're both passing each other. Hey, mag light guy. Hey, mag light guy.
Hey, flashy lights. but, you know, and watching dad's work ethic, I mean, you know, everybody's, oh, I'm the hardest working man in showbiz or hardest working person in show business. Dad was. I mean, the guy was an animal and an athlete, and he really trained every day. He worked so hard. And, you know, I don't think someone like me would take that lightly. You know, we had a good home life. You know, we had privilege to some degree, but dad always made sure that we were taken care of and that we were sheltered from some of the other stuff that was going on. You know, it was good parenting. My mom was always a homemaker and was very nurturing and very creative. And, I don't know. I didn't have a lot of rules, but I didn't look to break them because I like the privilege of driving. You know, I drove Dad's cars all the time back and forth to L.A. from Marin. When he wanted to swap out something, he would have me do it. And so I'd drive one, pick up something else and drive it back. And he never questioned or gave me instructions. You know, it was our thing.
You know, and when you think back on some of that, there was a lot of trust for a young man as well, because
absolutely.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I recall a story of something like your dad was working or whatever. And, you know, he's like, hey, you know, 16-year-old Aaron, someone in Hollywood needs this car for the video. You need to drive it down from Marin to the Malibu house, drop off the car, stay there by yourself for the weekend, drive it home.
Yeah.
You know, that's a pretty big task for a 16-year-old to do by yourself.
And that was pretty regular. When I went to private school,
by the way, he wasn't like Beach. Take this Lexus, by the way, you know, drive this Lexus down.
It was like take a XK convertible, take the Ferrari Boxer, take the Ferrari Daytona, take the Porsche 928 S4, take whatever else he had, the 400i Ferrari, whatever else he had then. And deliver it, you know, whether, like I said, it was for his interest or for someone else's. And I did the same thing with Eddie Van Halen had me drive some of his cars too. I drove the LM2, I drove the Countach. I didn't drive the Mira. I drove his little, I think we mentioned, I couldn't remember if it was a Cyclone or the little SUV Typhoon.
Yeah.
You know, I drove his Typhoon. I drove his 356. I was always the designated driver.
Yeah.
So I always drove something.
So because I wanted to ask about, when did you first get into cars? Was it something you found before your dad had cars, or was it as your dad was starting getting cars?
Absolutely. I've got photos of just, you know, hardly able to walk, and I've got an armful of cars and toys and almost every childhood photo has a little Hot Wheel or something in my hands. I had a couple teddy bears, but I was definitely a car guy from day one.
And what kind of influence do you think you had over your dad on some of his car purchases over the years? Is there anything that comes to mind?
That's a good question. I think in the early days we would have conversations, but it was always his thing.
Yeah.
But as I got older into a teenager, I don't think he bought cars because we would enjoy them. I don't think that was ever part of his purchasing ideas, but we have had conversations in adult life about certain cars. And he often almost always runs purchases by me. And I've helped him acquire a few. I've helped him find a few. Right now I'm helping him sell one. I've definitely become my Uncle Bucky to him. So my mom's brother is how they met, my Uncle Bucky. And he passed away, probably close to 30 years ago now. And he was the mechanic of the family. He was the car guy. He was a bleeding knuckle mechanic. And he was always Dad's go-to. And Bucky always knew 100 times more than Dad. Dad knew his way around a little bit, but Bucky always had car parts laying in his living room, you know, an engine block in the sink. And, you know, he was literally just, you know, he would eat out of them.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. And so he really lived and breathed it. And I've kind of become that for Dad. So not to take Bucky's place, but I think Dad and I have pretty detailed conversations. And I'm really flattered and honored to be the one that Dad calls with those questions. And so I've made sure that I know my stuff so I can answer them. And you guys have been a huge part of that, Matt, because the technical things that I didn't know, I could explore and I could listen. And I think that's why I don't always talk on the show, because I'm listening and I'm learning. And I forget
Brad talks
I have
a lot.
To engage. Well, that's it. But seriously, you know, you guys can tear down a motor, and you can tear down just a whole car and build it from the bottoms up. I consider myself more of a have to be mechanic. Something doesn't work and there's no one to help me, so I have to. But I'm more of the design quality and more of the restylist. And someone said that about me a long time ago that they I forget the exact words, but they basically said I was a hairstylist for cars, and I went, I'm okay with that. You know, I don't want to screw something up by not being an expert and hurt myself or someone else or my passengers by not knowing what I'm doing. I don't claim to know what I'm doing. Yeah. I do it necessity and love and passion and preservation, but I'll take restyling any day of the week. That's the easy part.
I want to get into some of the cars that you have and maybe some of the cars that your dad has. But first, let me tell you guys about JB Weld. It's the world's strongest bond. It's the brand DIYers and pros have trusted for over 50 years. Well, you can use their epoxies, super glues, putty sticks, and wraps for projects big and small on practically any surface, metal, wood, plastics, glass, ceramics, you name it. You can keep it in the drawer, keep it in your toolbox, keep it in craft supplies, of course, in your garage. You know, I've got it kind of stashed all over at the garage, at home, pretty much everywhere, because you never know when you need a little bit of something. They're also the proud owner of Herculiner. It's the original DIY truck bed liner. And if you're looking for the world's strongest truck bed liner, Herculiner has you covered. It's JB Weld. They're available at jbweld.com, Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, AutoZone, Advanced Auto Parts, O'Reilly, Amazon, Michaels, and more. It's proudly made in the USA. It's jbweld.com.
I have to say, yeah, honestly, that stuff is magic. And there's a lot of companies, and I work with another company too, but I have them both in my box. If you're an off-roader or motorcycle guy, you always have two-part epoxy JB Weld, the metal kind or the plastic kind in your kit or in your pocket. Always.
And you got to have the little tube of Super Weld stash around everywhere. They're super low. You know?
Exactly. That stuff has saved my ass so many times.
So tell us about some of the cars you've got. What's going on in your garage for those that don't listen to Shift and Steer regularly?
I've got a bunch of weird stuff, and they're literally, I'm watching on the screen that they're paving my shop right now. I don't know the building, so I had to clear everything out. I'm a little under the weather too. I apologize if I'm a little gravelly and coffee, but so yesterday I was just feverish and miserable, and I had to move all this stuff off the property so they could, you know, skim coat the whole place. But I've got a lot of oddities, and moving up here and starting fresh, I didn't have anything. And so everything that was free or cheap or I could trade was awesome. And so I got kind of in the rat rod scene and in the preservation scene. So I have a lot of those kind of vehicles. I have a bunch of old trucks and old rat rods and Model A's and things that we've made stuff from. And it was another way to be creative and learn as we go. And problem solve and fix as we go. And Tahoe's a small town, so we could literally pull something out of the earth on the original tires. And if we can get them to hold air to the other side of town, then that was success.
Yeah.
Great success, which was awesome. But the first time I drove into town, I saw this weird green army truck with a trailer behind it sitting at this gas station. And the owner became my best friend for a lot of reasons, but one, because he had that truck and it was called a Pinsgau. And we've discussed that so many times on the show, and it's a great way to share some love. But I have a Pinsgauer Swiss Army vehicle, 710K, which is the radio truck. I have currently four Isettas. Three of them are just basket cases. It's going to be something because they're worth preserving because they're so valuable. And the other one's a 600 limo with a Volkswagen conversion that I traded a gentleman not too long ago for a Dnieper, which is a Demper, it's like a Ural motorcycle with a sidecar. We loved each other's, so we traded. I've got a little M3 race car, just a home build. I've got a TR3 Outlaw, a Triumph TR3 Outlaw with a 66 Mustang motor in it. I've got a Morgan three-wheeler, which I just love, love, love. It's one of my favorite vehicles. Defender 110, which is one of my other favorite vehicles.
What year is the Defender?
The Defender is a 93.
Okay.
Yeah, it's one of those. And then I have a 55 Ford cab over. I've got a smart car that we plan on tearing up and converting with one of the Isettas. I've got a 60 and a 61 Mini Coopers and a couple contemporary Porsches and a Jeep. And I'm always cycling and going through things because you finish something and then what? You know, you use it for a while and you're like, eh, I want to move on to something else. So you trade it. And right now I'm kind of purging and trying to move out a lot of this stuff because I have a couple big projects. So I'm overlanding. I love overlanding. So we're going to do a build out on the Jeep. I've decided we just went through Moab for a week and boy, outfitting a Jeep Gladiator is a lot more difficult than I thought. It's a strange composition. So I think we're going to do something with that. And then the Defender, I blew the motor. So the motor's being rebuilt and I bought an Alu cab. So we're going to do a build with that. So those are two pretty expensive builds. And then I have something else coming from Fair Parts. That's all I'm going to say, but, I think I'm going to own my first, prancing horse, but, so I'm going to get rid of about three or four things to do that. Yeah, you know, it feels good to purge and focus on the things that you really love and enjoy them and not be hassled by just keeping all the other relics going that always need something, right? That's our world.
They
always need something. And the more you mess with them, the more they need messed with. And motorcycles.
if people can get a glimpse of a lot of these cars, these cars definitely reflect your personality and your background and your creativity in the movie industry. Yeah. You've done some pretty very, very cool things with the style, the paint, and, you know, take something like Red Voodoo, which I think you forgot to mention because it's probably over at Kicker, right?
It's one of the rat rods. Yeah. Red Voodoo's in Stillwater, Oklahoma, and the October Moon is down at my friend Colby's getting some brake work done. And we sold the 50 shoebox. We sold the 53 Chevy.
Do you have the wagon? Do you have the beach bar wagon?
So dad bought the wagon and asked me to make it a Woody wagon. So yeah, the 56 Woody wagon is down in dad's collection, and dad's got a killer collection. I mean, he still has the Jag, the 70, I think 72 or 74 XK. Well,
everybody wants to know if he's got the Ferrari, if you got the, I can't drive 55 Ferrari. Yes. Of course he does.
Yep, he's got the 82 BB512. I just saw it a couple weeks ago. He's got the 84 400i. He's got a 456. He's got the Daytona still. He's had cars since I was a kid. I mean, he doesn't get rid of a lot of stuff. He gets some stuff which he passes through the collection.
Yeah.
But he still has all that stuff. The E-Jag, he's got a Ford GT, the earlier ones. He's got a Gateway Mustang, which is badass, with a Roush small block 427.
Yeah.
He's got the Woody wagon. Yeah. And then we just had a 62 T-Bird restored for him, which used to belong to Ronnie Montrose. So that's down there. And then, the Jaguar used to belong to Ronnie James Dio. So that's pretty cool. And then the Daytona, to the legendary John Holmes. that car's got some history.
Yeah.
The LaFerrari, and then he's got an Aston Martin Vanquish. He's got a Z8 Alpina, which he drives almost every day. That's one of his favorite cars. He's got that 67 Corvette that Hendrick gave him for his birthday. And then we just had Shelby build him that 289 slab side Cobra.
Yeah.
Which he loves. So the Corvette, the Cobra, and I think the Z8 are his three daily drivers. Yeah. And then he's got a 599 and a 308.
Yeah. The 599 is cool. 308 is cool. I don't know about that 456, but whatever.
You know what, though? It's a manual. It's a gated manual. And it's 12-cylinder.
That's kind of funny. Can't go wrong.
But if you think about it, he's got the 400i. Mm-hmm. He's got the 456 and he's got the 599. And now if he had a Ferrari FF or Lusso, he'd kind of have the generation of those two-door four-seaters. And they're kind of the oddballs of Ferrari, but, you know, like the Queen Mother, they're getting really valuable. That 456 is, I think they're 150 or 100, they're almost 200 grand right now.
I didn't think they were that much, but sure.
And it's beautiful.
Yeah. Okay.
You know what though? Hey, I drove it. It drives really, really nice. It's a grand touring. That's yeah. what it is. It doesn't look, but it makes all the right sounds and has all the right smells and does everything a Ferrari should. So like, I have to say, I'm
like a Ferrari V12 with a manual. I'm down. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And everything is leather. Everything is leather on that thing. It's yeah. Yeah. Ferraris are awesome.
All right. Well, listen, we got to wrap it up, but, I appreciate what? It. We spent 10 minutes on cars and 40 minutes on Aaron's history. So, but you know, we're mixing it up this week. I appreciate it. Aaron, well, thanks so much, man. It's thanks beautiful. So much for coming in and doing this. I just fired him a text last night. I was like, what are you doing tomorrow morning? You want to come join me? He's like, okay.
I'm sick, miserable, but I should be good by 10. Yeah. I think at like 9:50, I was like, okay, my throat feels better. I can swallow now. My arms, I feel like I have arms now. My arms felt like my legs earlier, you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, I appreciate
it. Blues and colds, man.
Yeah.
They knock us over. Well, thank you for having me. Thank you so much to the crew in there for getting all the edits right.
Oh, thanks. If you guys want to hear more about Aaron and all the wackiness, listen to Shift and Steer. There's plenty of bear stories. Because a bear ate his car, decided to
tear up
the interior and take a nap, and then be on his way. Fucking Tahoe. All right,
you
man.
Know what? I say that at the beginning and end of everything. Fucking Tahoe.
Fucking Tahoe. Yeah.
Maybe. Just watch the car. Now it's covered in pollen and sap and bear paws.
Yeah, bear paws. All right, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.
Would you love to save money on insurance? Well, of course, who doesn't love a good deal? Well, when it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, GEICO can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even homeowners, condo, and renters coverage. Save even more with a special discount when you bundle coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use GEICO mobile app and 24-hour roadside assistance, and the switch to GEICO becomes a no-brainer. Switch today and see how you can save. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.